Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we are just, 3 days away from the sky falling, if you believe the Obama administration, if you believe some other folks. We're going to see a decrease in the increase of spending in some areas for 2013, with the exception of defense. I think they actually will see a net drop in defense spending. But the fact that the president is going on this sky is falling tour has even gotten to the point where it's annoying the likes of the co-hosts of Morning Joe, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Less surprising for Scarborough than for Mika, because I think fiscal conservatism is about the one area where we can reliably consider Joe to be still a conservative. They were reacting, actually, to a piece written by your boss, the editor of National Review, Rich Lowry, where he says it shouldn't be that hard to find $85 billion to cut. And surprise, surprise, Mika and Joe agree with that.
What I do agree with is, how can you not cut $85 billion responsibly? How can they not come together and figure this out?
And by the way, take what Rich said, combine that with what Tom Coburn said, talking about how the budget has doubled over the past decade. Mm-hmm. So really what we're talking about is, we can't take 3 cents out of a dollar today, but putting it in historical perspective, that's 3 cents out of a hyperinflated dollar, if that dollar we're talking about is federal spending, which has exploded at obscene rates under Barack Obama and George W. Bush.
So even the liberals now, speaking of Mika more than Joe here, Jim, are understanding that this is not the end of the world. And the fact that the Obama administration is trying to line up all these areas that will make people suffer as a result of this sequestration is hopefully going to fall on deaf ears here.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. One of the things that I really would like to see a strong spotlight put on is the numbers are the numbers, you know, and the only thing I believe the sequestration really makes clear is how much has to be from defense and how much is from non-defense discretionary spending. You guys are administering the cuts to the administration. The cabinet is what does it. And it's kind of very strange. You see the likes of Napolitano coming out and saying, well, look, we're going to do the best we can to, you know, shield the public from this, but really it's going to be awful. And basically, so they have to basically say, we are terrible administrators. We are completely incapable of actually making any changes or of actually eliminating waste or prioritizing. They need to pressure the Republicans, but at the same time, they need to say, we're good administrators, and you can't do both. Because otherwise, your argument is a 2% cut is absolutely devastating. And I've heard a lot of folks argue that really, when you get down to it, when you think about how much is actually from the previous years, really closer to a 1% cut. Unsurprisingly, this is a depressing set of state of affairs, the Washington Monument coming from the President of the United States. But I think what's really interesting is that you see, you know, Mika Brzezinski and these types, liberals who actually know how Washington works, know how ridiculous this is, and really can't keep a straight face when this argument is put forth by the administration.
Yeah, that's a good point. And speaking of Napolitano, she's basically saying, watch out for basically no guarding of the southern border. That's what's going to have to happen as a result of our portion of the $85 billion. Oh, that and the release of detained illegals, at least the least dangerous ones. So good to see that they're prioritizing. I'm sure there's no waste whatsoever to behemoth like the Department of Homeland Security. Just unbelievable.
I'll start on that next, Greg. Those who've been reading Campaign Spot know that I was talking about the Department of Transportation's Lego purchases yesterday. And today it's the state-of-the-art $1.5 million to research new forms of beef jerky from the Department of Defense, which, you know, I guess you'd call it assault beef jerky, Greg, be used on the front lines.
On to martini number two now. And yesterday we talked about our frustration with the big tax hike coming from Virginia and really Virginia Republicans, including Governor Bob McDonnell, to pay for the transportation plan. One thing we referenced just in passing is this kind of impending civil war on the Republican side as the governor's race approaches in this odd-numbered year. Terry McAuliffe has cleared the field. He'll be the Democratic nominee. Ken Cuccinelli is going to be the Republican nominee. The lieutenant governor, who's been there for almost 8 years, Bill Bowling, was going to run for governor. He had McDonnell's endorsement. Then Cuccinelli got in, decided he couldn't win a fight at the Republican convention, so he got out of the race and now is making noise about running as an independent, which would obviously be a massive headache for the party. If that weren't enough, you've got some of these types who are more on the lines of McDonnell and Bowling showing up at Ken Cuccinelli fundraisers and business roundtables, and that happened recently, according to a story in Politico, where McDonnell donors who are very clearly on the record for not wanting Cuccinelli to win, basically stood up and berated him over what they see as his lack of vision and business policies and just being too conservative to win in what they consider a purple state now. Part of this bad martini is the fact that tough questions have become a huge story for the Republican candidate. But secondly, it seems like some on the Republican side in Virginia would rather lose to a Democrat than have a good conservative like Ken Cuccinelli in office.
I'm about ready to crown the allegedly, right-leaning business community of Virginia, because they are the ones who are pushing for tax increases to deal with the transportation. What is probably going to turn into, as the editors of National Review call it, a black mark on the record of Governor McDonnell. And I'm also getting cranky with Governor McDonnell on a couple of fronts, not just signing this deal into law. But first of all, I mean, you'd think he'd have the pull with Bill Boling to say, look, Bill, you can't do this. You cannot run independent. You cannot split the center-right vote. And you cannot leave this state in the hands of Terry McAuliffe. Not if you believe anything you've said for the past 8 years as my lieutenant governor. I understand it's very frustrating to not be nominated as governor. I know you thought you had that nomination sewn up. You've been a good soldier for 8 years. But they went instead of from primary to a convention. Even in the polling, Boling was down, by like 50 points to Cuccinelli. Cuccinelli is a rock star amongst Virginia conservatives for a lot of reasons, but not least of which, he was amongst those leading the fight against Obamacare, and that earned him a lot of goodwill. Lieutenant Governor Boling, I'm sorry, but that's sometimes the way the politics develops. And so here's Boling ready to go to pull a Perot, do a third party, split the vote. And now these business leaders saying they can't get on board with Cuccinelli. Governor McDonnell, this is a good time to step up and work the phones and say, no, you're getting on board with Cuccinelli. And Cuccinelli is going to be my successor because I don't want my successor to be Terry McAuliffe. Just been very, very disappointing with McDonnell on a whole bunch of fronts on this. And I may need to, start chewing people out. In the fourth year of McDonald's governorship, just everything go awry. It's just it's off the rails, and it's a very depressing state of affairs for Virginia Republicans.
Yeah, absolutely. If you remember the midterms in Virginia, everybody was flocking, even Democrats who disagreed with him for his endorsement. And he obviously had a lot of pull for the Republicans he did endorse in some of these House and Senate races. But he's not using that bully pulpit in Virginia right now, and he needs to. On to the crazy martini now, and we're back with Senator Bob Menendez, a Democrat of New Jersey. He, of course, under investigation by the FBI for his association with his good friend, the doctor down in Florida, Mr. Melgen. Two stories out just in the last couple days that are adding fuel to the fire for that. Number one is that he was seen at the Teterboro Airport, or at least near there at a restaurant, on the very day that he was alleged to have gone to the Dominican Republic and these alleged encounters with underage prostitutes took place. He denies that trip ever happened. That certainly makes it look dubious, his denial there. Also, the Daily Caller, which broke this story, pointing out that a high-dollar escort who basically travels the East Coast has claimed that Menendez, after seeing a photo of him, definitely was a client, which doesn't necessarily mean he's done anything illegal, but it definitely means that the allegations from the Dominican Republic aren't necessarily out of the question. Now, in response to all this, speaking at the Shiloh Baptist Church in Trenton over the weekend, Menendez says, quote, "We face anonymous, faceless, nameless individuals from right-wing sources seeking to destroy a lifetime of work, and their scares are false. I have worked too hard and too long in the vineyards to allow at my hands for the harvest to be soured." And then he decides to invoke Dr. King. He says, "Dr. King said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. In the end, I believe that justice will overcome the forces of darkness. Scriptures tell us that he who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not for the kingdom of God." So apparently that's Bob Menendez's way of interpreting scripture to say, hey, anything I've allegedly done in the past, don't focus on that. We need to move forward.
Stick by me. What I thought was fascinating was the reaction, at least in the circles that I travel, both online and offline, that as soon as Menendez said this, it was basically perceived as, okay, he's guilty. That once he starts, he didn't play the race card from day one. It's only when, the evidence starts piling up that all of a sudden it's racism that's driving this. And, that's the sign of guilt. I mean, it says something about our time that we kind of all kind of dismiss the idea that it could be, horrible racism on the part of the Daily Caller. I'm sure, I guess the race card is overdrawn, as they said in that famous Daily Show routine. And so no one takes this seriously. Naturally, you know, he just kind of assumes that racial animosity is at the heart of this, not into the evidence that's piling up. We don't know exactly what's going on with Bob Menendez. When you look at the favors he's done for his donors, the pressure he was putting on various, you know, Caribbean countries and stuff, the whole thing stinks to high heaven. And, you know, we know what kind of guy Bob Menendez is now. So now the question is just how bad is it? Way to go, New Jersey. Way to go.
Absolutely right. So we'll see if how long he hangs on. They'll force him out eventually if it gets too bad, probably. He's not that valuable. But that's your chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, ladies and gentlemen.
Foreign Relations Committee. Foreign Relations. Let's kind of, you know, squeeze every cheap joke we can get out of it.
Exactly. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Doing great, Greg. I'll see you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.